Hello, I'm Charles Schmitz from the American Institute of Yemeni Studies and professor of geography at Towson University.
My name is Gregory Johnson. I'm currently a Fulbright Hayes Fellow in Egypt researching Yemen, and I'm a PhD candidate in Near Eastern Studies at Princeton University.
We thought we would begin this chat with a little bit of an analysis of how we got to the situation that we're in today. And then we'll go from there. In my view, one of the things that people need to understand about Yemen is that it's a very diverse society, and that power in Yemen is geographically dispersed, that there are local powers that have a considerable amount of influence in their local affairs and a considerable amount of autonomy from the central government. And within that context, in the last, say, 20 years after Yemeni unity in 1990, the president, Ali Abdullah Saleh, has applied a principle of rule that Yemenis call divide and conquer. And so what the president does is build local alliances in the outlying regions, within the central area and within the outlying regions, through which he rules. He builds alliances rather than directly ruling areas. He will make alliances through political parties, through tribal affiliations, through clan associations, all kinds of different kinds of power structures. He will make alliances with people in the regional areas. But what he is very afraid of is that somebody else will make a broad alliance against him. And so on the one hand, he's trying to tie people into him, and on the other hand, he is trying to prevent anybody else from doing so. And so it's kind of a constant divide and conquer. He'll make an alliance when he thinks that alliance is getting too strong. He'll make an alliance with the opponents. He'll try and break that prior alliance down again. This is the divide and conquer tactic that Ali Abdullah Saleh has been using. And it does two things. It keeps people from building a broad opposition against him. And secondly, it keeps him personally tied to political developments. And this has prevented institutional development in Yemen. One of the big problems with Yemen is that while there is a parliament and while there is a state and there's local governments, that these institutions are quite weak. There were two major conflicts. There was the civil war in 1994 between the North and the South, remnants of the Socialist Party in the South that rejected unity after a couple of years. And then there was the Houthi conflict in the North that really goes back to the civil war when the royalists in the North lost and Saada was the central area of the royalists and they lost that war. And in both of these regions, Ali Abdullah Saleh's strategy of divide and conquer didn't work. In other words, he caused too much chaos people united against him. And one of the good things that we see today is that his strategy of divide and conquer has united big parts of the country against him. And in fact, his strategy is failing, in the sense that he has now created a broad-based coalition against him. The straw that broke the camel's back was in the last 5 years, the president's attempt to guarantee succession of his sons to power, to maintain his family in power. He's been kind of working on this for quite some time, and this split the inner circle of the regime, and particularly Ali Mohsen al-Ahmar, who opposed this. He described it as the crazy dreams of Ali Abdullah Saleh's sons. And in the last 5 years, they've been positioning, sometimes with violence, to either on Ali Abdullah Saleh's side to bring his sons to power and Ali Mohsen's side to frustrate this. And in the end, Ali Mohsen won. That he was able to prevent Ali Abdullah Saleh from getting his sons into power. And this was represented by Ali Abdullah Saleh's proposals before Parliament for constitutional change and extending his rule, because in essence he had failed to guarantee his son's succession. That was just prior to the events in Tunisia and in Egypt. And so now what you have is an opposition that's, of course, galvanized by the street. We should talk about who those people are in the street. Then one faction of the opposition, then another faction of the opposition, Dalit Abdullah Saleh, are the traditional parties, which would be the Islah Party, the Hizb al-Ishtiraki, and some of the other parties that are allied with them, which are the traditional political elite, who have been unified for some time, but now have gotten a great deal more influence in Yemen because of the street protests. And then you have people who are breaking off from the regime itself. For example, Ali Mohsen al-Ahmar. And one, I think, question that we should look at, Greg, is, given that so much of the regime has broken off, how much of a change will the exit of Ali Abdullah Saleh bring if much of his regime is waiting in the opposition to take power? How much of a change does this actually represent?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I mean, one of the things that we've seen over, I think, the past few months, at least when I think about what's been developing in Yemen, I look at sort of two things. And one was, I think a lot of people in Yemen were waiting for Hosni Mubarak to step down in Egypt, and he did that on February 11th. And that same day that Mubarak stepped down was also the day that you saw, for the first time, really people come out into the streets outside the umbrella of this six-party coalition that you talked about, the Joint Meetings Party, the JMP. And throughout January, as events in Tunisia and Egypt had really taken off, the JMP had tried to create some street protests, but they didn't really take off in the way that we've seen in February and March and now into April. Before that, this is something that was, I think, led by the student activists. And now, as you mentioned, Charles, so many different people have joined. You talked about Ali Mohsen al-Ahmar, and his defection on March 21st was, I think, a real key blow to the president. Ali Mohsen al-Ahmar, of course, commands the 1st Armored Division. Yemen is divided into four military zones, and Ali Mohsen al-Ahmar commands the Northwest Military Zone. And, of course, he's a fellow tribesman of the president and someone who, for the past three decades, has really been instrumental in protecting President Ali Abdullah Saleh, upholding his interests within the military and so forth. And so the defection of him on March 21st was, I think, really a shocking blow to the president, and one which I don't see a way that he can recover and really hold on to power until 2013. But getting back to your question, I mean, what we've seen today is that the most recent attempt at mediation by the GCC, Ali Abdullah Saleh has rejected that today. And even that mediation attempt, they were talking about people in power, such as a transition council headed by Abdul Karim al-Iryani, Abdulaziz Abdul Ghani, and Hamid al-Ahmar. Now, the first of these two guys, as you well know, are much older than President Saleh, and they've been staunch Saleh allies for the past several decades. Hamid al-Ahmar is a bit of a different case. But that sort of a transition council, I don't think that represents that much of a change from President Saleh, do you?
No. And I'll just say now what my hope for Yemen is. The one good thing that I saw come out of Hamid al-Ahmar, who I see as a beneficiary of this change, I think that in the last 5 years as well, which we've seen particularly with the conflict in the Houthis, is a decline of the power of Hashid.
Right. And just to interrupt you, there was a Washington Post story today that was detailing the WikiLeaks that had Hamid al-Ahmar, who's a tribal leader within Hashid and a businessman, going to the U.S. Embassy in 2009 and talking about a potential plan to overthrow President Saleh back in August of 2009.
Yeah, and interestingly, he goes to the United States. In other words, what that means is that he doesn't have the power that his father, for example, had within Yemen. Mm-hmm. He's looking for external backers for his coup. And But one of the things that he said that I think is good is he said that the next president of Yemen should be a southerner. In this, what he is recognizing is that no one group is powerful enough to rule Yemen. In other words, you have the Houthis in the north that have established their independent power. You have the Hirak in the south, the secessionist movement in the south, or the southern movement, we'll call it, in the south, that they have established their own power base. You have the traditional opposition parties that have their own constituencies. But none of them have the, even we can say Ali Mohsen and his military, no one alone can rule Yemen. And as long as they all recognize that, and they recognize that in order for Yemen to work, they're going to have to work with each other. And I take as inspiration the experience of the JMP, that, this was... The two principal parties there are the Yemeni Socialist Party and the Islah, the party actually that Hamid al-Ahmar's father led, who fought each other, who were mortal enemies, who were killing each other, but came together and formed a joint party and had been working together in opposition to the president. And since the protests have broken out, the Houthis in the north and the Hirak in the south, both of which had rejected dealing anything with the opposition movements, now are working with them. They've all come together on the basis of opposition to the regime. Go ahead.
Sorry, and that I think is the important point, is that all of these groups, from the Houthis in the north, who've been fighting the president and the military for the past 7 years, to the groups in the south who are talking about seceding, they're all aligned right now because they oppose the president. So once you remove the president and his immediate family, his son and his nephews from that, then is this going to be a coalition that can continue to work together, or are they going to fracture and fragment? I mean, with Hamid al-Ahmar, it's something where once the president, if you look at Yemen as sort of a zero-sum game, when the president is removed, even if Hamid doesn't become president, he wins. He becomes more powerful in that equation. And that's important for him. And I think he realizes that given his reputation, I mean, this is a guy who, when he first stood for parliament back in 1993, some of his armed bodyguards broke into a polling center, took one of the ballot boxes and returned it later, stuffed with votes for him. I mean, this is a guy who doesn't have a great reputation in Yemen. A lot of the activists, a lot of the intelligentsia are very, very suspicious of him and sort of look at a Saleh for Hamid change as just one tribesman for another. And so I think the really important question, and the key question, at least for me, is whether all these different groups, and remember, Ali Mohsen al-Ahmar, this military general, was the guy who was really in charge of the war up against the north, against the Houthis, and now they're on the same side against the president. So can these diverse, these very different groups, can they hold on to some sort of an alliance for any sort of national unity once Saleh and his family leaves the country?
That's right, and it's not just... It's not just Mohsen al-Ahmar who was in charge of the military campaign, but also the tribes of Hashid. They were key in fighting the Houthi. These people that even 6 months ago were killing each other, now they have to sit down and work it out. But, I mean, that's true of every one of the opposition members. I mean, one of the things that the Hirak is complaining about is that some of their members are still in jail and they're under the control of Ali Mohsen. So like, hey, what's the opposition here? I think yesterday's reaction to the GCC becoming involved in their proposals, you saw very different reactions. You saw the protesters, and we should talk a little bit, I think, about who they actually are. They rejected any international ownership of Yemen's future. They said that any future government that they have to have the final decision on, whereas both the traditional opposition and Ali Mohsen said no, this is a good thing, and Ali Mohsen actually said this is what the protesters are asking for. So you see the splits already. I mean, the hope is that something like what happened with the JMP, where people, though they hate each other, they learned that the only way that they were going to get ahead was by sort of institutionalizing the idea that they can agree to disagree, and they can agree.
Right, but they did that in the context where the president was too strong for any of them to take on independently. Mm-hmm. And once he's gone, then what will be the force that holds them together? Will it just be patriotism?
No, I wouldn't say it's patriotism. I would say, I'm hoping here, that
right.
It would be a recognition that that civil war would be very destructive, that you know, no one of them can win, and that they all suffered under Ali Abdullah's Saleh strategy, and that there could be some change in governance. And I think the key thing for Yemen, both in its political problems we see, but in the economic problems that they have as well, the key thing is to start building trust in institutions. And you know, the only way this happens is if we agree to put down our guns and that we will make we will resolve our disagreements through an institutional means that people begin to trust. And you know, my only hope, the JMP, the experience of the JMP is positive, I think, in that. And some of the statements that are coming out from folks, they recognize, like Hamid, saying that it must be a southerner. They recognize that it's got to be a more broad-based government, that it won't succeed without that.
Right. I mean, there's the argument that could be made that Hamid's only saying that because the president is in power now and he knows that that's what he has to say. But and I agree. I share your hope on what Yemen will look like. But I wonder how realistic you think that hope is.
You know, the scenario, the opposite scenario would be Somalia, that it breaks down, that the Southerners take up weapons, that the Houthi sort of, whereas so far they have not sort of set up a mini state, you know, set up their own sovereignty. I mean, they allowed Yemeni troops back into the areas that they had fought, and the Yemeni troops are on the borders right now, that they reverse that and try and hold their own territory. That, you know, there's some sort of a fight within Sana'a between Ali Muqsin, let's say, and Hamid al-Ahmar, or there's an alliance between Ali Muqsin and Hamid al-Ahmar, something like this. I think, you know, with the deteriorating economy, and the difficult political situation, I don't see anybody making an attempt to do what Ali Abdullah Saleh did. It would be just sort of mutual destruction.
Right.
And I think the experience of what has happened in the north and what has happened in the south, along with sort of the wasted opportunity of the oil money that has not been spent on, future infrastructure and education and these sorts of things, the hope is that people realize that if they're going to get ahead at all, they're just going to have to get ahead with some sort of a regional federal government of some sort.
Right. I wrote about this a little bit in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago, but one of the things that I'm really concerned about is that any government that follows President Saleh, first, I think that a lot of people are sort of putting all of their frustrations on the person of the president right
yes.
now. That is, that they think that once President Saleh and his immediate family are gone, things are going to be much, much better. And so I think hopes are being artificially inflated right now. And the fear that I have is that the next government that comes in, no matter what form it takes, is going to have to make a number of incredibly difficult decisions, many of these to do with the economy. I mean, there just aren't the jobs right now. Jobs haven't been created. There's massive corruption, of course. But once President Saleh is gone, and once there's a new government, how much patience are people going to have when they find out that the economic reality that they knew before they took to the streets is the same one that they're facing once the president has gone? And how much patience they'll have with that new government? It seems like this next government is going to be put into an incredibly difficult position, and it's going to have to make decisions that are not popular with anybody. So whether people will have the patience to stick with them beyond several months, beyond a year, is an open question. And I'm not terribly optimistic that it'll be something that they find a way to work out.
Yeah, I would say on that people's feeling about the future are important. If they feel that they have some impact on government, that they have some influence, and that the government is effectively at least trying to address their problems, then I think they will have a lot of patience. I mean, people realize that the economic situation is difficult.
Even as the economy continues to decline? I mean, we both know what it's like in Yemen. I mean, the poverty there, particularly when you get outside of the cities, is just crippling for many people.
Yeah, they have about 40%. Of course, their poverty level is not near what most of Southern Africa is. So we have to put Yemeni poverty in context.
But putting it in context in the regional comparison, I mean, when Yemenis look at their neighbors on the Arabian Peninsula, I mean, there's a very stark contrast there. Because Yemenis don't tend to compare themselves to sub-Saharan Africa, although I agree that's a fair point. They tend to compare themselves to the other Arabs within the peninsula.
Right. And my feeling would be that if people feel like government is addressing their problems, even slowly, they'll be far more patient. But let's jump a little bit to a different topic here. And I think one of the critical roles that the United States could play, I'm not sure they're going to be able to do so in this, is coordinating a regional solutions to Yemen's problems. Because you're right in the sense that Yemen's economy is tied to the GCC. And the solutions to many of their problems, economic problems, are tied to the GCC. If the GCC were to allow Yemeni workers back into the Gulf, it would go a long way in helping out Yemen. Not completely.
Do you think that's a realistic hope, allowing Yemeni workers back into Saudi, back into some of the other places, in a way that we saw prior to 1990?
I think that it's not prior to 1990. That was the mainstay of the Yemen economy. That won't be the case. In the future of Yemen, their economy is not going to be dependent upon one resource like worker remittances as it was mm-hmm. prior to the 90s or oil in the last two decades. The Yemeni economy is going to be much more diverse, and so you've got to make progress on all the different fronts. For me, the key actually is Yemeni private investors coming back into the economy. And they're not going to do so until they trust the government. So here's the question of trust in government again. And if there is a government that actually begins to build institutions that people trust inside of Yemen, then Yemeni investors will begin to come back in. And that is the key. That's really what will turn the Yemeni economy around. But small measures will help. And one of them is getting the Yemeni workers into the Gulf. And that's really a political question. I mean, there is movement. There are training programs for Yemenis, and there are small numbers of Yemenis that are getting into the Gulf. But it's largely a political issue. The Gulf stalls on this because they're afraid of Yemenis and Yemeni ideas. And here's where the United States can play a key role in sort of, you know, convincing the Gulf. This is where leadership would help. Because, you know, the Gulf has these ideas about Yemenis that are not real accurate. They could be leaned on a little bit. I know that at the moment the United States is not leaning on the Gulf, but they could. This is one place where American leadership could have a big effect on the Yemeni economy.
Do you think that the U.S., looking at, say, the State Department, do you think it has the institutional knowledge to put up against, like, a country like Saudi Arabia, who's been heavily involved, often in a very negative way, in Yemen over the past several decades? Is this something where the U.S. can say, look, we know what's best for Yemen, and we'd like to convince you that what is in our interest in Yemen is also in your interest? Because I guess what I've seen and what's been a concern for me is more that it seems as though the U.S. is sort of abdicating its leadership role to Saudi Arabia and let Saudi Arabia sort of take the lead in Yemen. And I think that's dangerous and not something that's in the best long-term interests of U.S. policy in Yemen.
Yes, I agree. I absolutely agree with that. And that was one of my concerns with the call of the GCC to mediate the Yemeni conflict. That the United States would sort of let them do it and not have any role in it. And I agree with you. I mean, the Saudi role in Yemen has been sort of to subsidize various factions of society, subsidized tribesmen, subsidized political parties, subsidized the state itself, depending upon their interests. And it's rather divisive. The Saudi policy is to kind of keep Yemen disunified, but not too weak that it would fall apart.
And chaotic, but not too chaotic.
And actually, it parallels the strategy of the president. The Saudis, they're very concerned now, of course, about security, and the United States is concerned about security. And so, if they could, the United States and the Saudis, particularly I think the United States could convince the Saudis that a more institutionalized Yemen would be good for them, that would be good. In other words, if Saudi's funds kept coming into Yemen, but they came through official and transparent channels, that would go through a long way. And that would be hard to do. I mean, the Saudis, of course, they're concerned, and they basically are going to govern Yemen the way they want to govern Yemen. They're trying to build their own constituencies, regardless of what happens in Sana'a. That's because they're afraid. That's because they fear Yemen, and they want to maintain their influence in it. Once again, institutionalization. If we can begin to build institutions, and the United States could try and play a leadership role here, I do share your doubts about the United States commitment. I mean, Gates, his recent visit to Saudi Arabia, he's basically trying to repair relations after the United States condemned the Saudi invasion of Bahrain, and the Saudis are very upset about the United States abandoning Mubarak. I think that the United States needs to sort of reevaluate their position, think more long term in terms of what they want to see in the Gulf on this. And I'm not sure that they can do that. I mean, of course, Washington is on an election cycle all the time, and whether they have the resources to look in a longer perspective, I don't know. But I really think you need to in this case.
Right. Well, two things. First, on Saudi Arabia, I think Saudi could make an argument that look at what's happening right now in Sana'a, and this is the reason for Saudi national security, for Saudi national interest, that we need to pursue the strategy that we've pursued in, subsidizing different tribal sheikhs and having other people to work with besides President Saleh. Because if you only work with President Saleh and then he falls like what appears to be happening right now, then you're in trouble. So I think that's an argument that Saudi Arabia could make in favor of what it is that they've been traditionally doing. Although I completely agree with you, I think for the long-term interests of Yemen, that's something that severely hampers the state. And I think the U.S. does, like you suggested, need to convince Saudi Arabia to funnel its money through the central government in order to help the central government build institutions. But I'm curious, and here's the second thing, as to doesn't someone first need to convince the U.S. that this is in their national security interests as well? Because it really seems to me as though the U.S. has been so solely focused on the threat of al-Qaeda within the Arabian Peninsula that all its strategy, all its policy towards Yemen is really viewed through that paradigm, that essentially it only sees Yemen as a counterterrorism problem that has to be solved. And by looking at the country that way, that impacts and that affects all the decisions that the U.S. makes when it comes to U.S. policy towards Yemen.
Yeah, well, and it's failed. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
I was going to point out that while the Saudis' strategy of sort of funneling money to different factions and trying to manipulate them in their interest hasn't worked very well either, the U.S. strategy of backing Ali Abdullah Saleh with his military, that failed as well. So both the Saudi and the American policies have failed. So maybe it's time to try something else.
Right.
And I think the big thing that both of them sort of miss is, popular, institutions, getting local government to actually work, getting economic institutions to actually work. These are the things that the Yemenis want. The Yemenis want political participation. They want transparency. They want, coherent economic plans and some idea that the future is going to be at least a little bit better than it is now.
Right.
And neither the American or the Saudi program addresses that.
Right, they don't do anything to foster that. I agree. But those things that you're talking about, I mean, they're going to take a long time to develop, I think. And they're also going to require people who've never collaborated and cooperated to cooperate and work together in a way that they haven't in the past. It's essentially going to ask all these different interest groups to set aside their own narrow interests and focus on broader and more longer term interests. And this is something that, as we discussed before, neither the U.S. or Saudi Arabia has been able to do in Yemen. And so I'm not quite as optimistic that this will be what actually develops in Yemen. I certainly hope it will be, but I don't think the chances are particularly good that that will be the scenario that evolves out of this.
Well, when you say they have to set aside their individual interests, I'm not exactly sure that they do. I mean, in the sense that the Herak in the south, the southerners will get their own control, their own governance, that the Houthis will have a major role in the government in the north.
These are assumptions that we're making. I mean, they're not guaranteed that either of those things will happen.
Right, right. No, I'm talking about you made the statement that people need to set aside their own individual interests. Well, if you define your individual interests simply as you being the sole ruler of Yemen, then yeah, I mean that won't work. But that coming together. And sort of institutionalizing our local autonomy, and this has been a central point for many of the opposition movements in Yemen for a long time. It was a central part of the civil war, the question of local governance, actually making local governance work. The regional powers will get much of what they ask for. Recognizing the need for the same sort of recognition of someone else's power, say the Houthis and the Herak, or Islah and socialists, recognizing the needs of each other will give everybody else a gain as well. So it's not exactly a zero-sum game.
One of the things that I'm a little worried about is that I think there's a sense in Yemen right now that all these different groups that are in the opposition, whether it's the Houthis, whether it's the Southern Movement, they all assume that President Saleh and his immediate family have been stealing all the money. And I think to a certain degree they're right. But I think the assumption that they make on how much money there is and how much money will be available to them in a post-Saleh Yemen, I think they're overestimating the amount of money that will start to flow in for them to be able to do things like create development within their own local regions. One of the things that you saw Hussein al-Houthi, the initial leader of the Houthi movement, talk about in his speeches back in 2002, 2003, before the wars ever started up in the north, was the fact that the government had been promising for years to put different places in Saadeh, in this northern governorate, on the electrical grid. They hadn't done that there was only one hospital in Saadeh, that they still hadn't had paved roads. And I think people are going to be looking for a lot of money to come flowing in once Saleh and his family leaves that just won't be there.
The question of post-Saleh expectations, it's true. I mean, it's not going to be a complete change. And one of the things I thought was interesting was people often compare Ali Abdullah Saleh to the Imam, once there's a different government in place, then all things will be good.
Right.
But once again, I think that if people have the feeling that government is at least in their interest, then they'll be far more patient. Yemenis are very practical, and they're very hardworking. And we saw this when they all went off to work in the Gulf and the rest.
Right.
The Yemenis are all over the world. They can put together the resources to improve. Now, granted that resources are there's not a whole lot of resources in Yemen. Mm-hmm. But if people feel that the future is going to improve, not necessarily that immediately they're going to be far more richer, but at least the government's working in their interest, so that the electrical grid, if the government says electrical grid, we intend to work on the electrical grid, and here are the issues, and here's the budget, and here's our schedule, that people will be satisfied with that. It's when, you know, the government just makes no attempt whatsoever and anything they say is not trustworthy that people right. begin to rebel.
So let me ask you then, if a government that follows Saleh, and we're talking about Saleh as if he's left, and of course he hasn't left. He just gave another defiant speech after Friday prayers today saying that he wasn't going to leave. But assuming that President Saleh is not able to survive this political crisis and that he's forced to step down, and that this government comes in and that people do have, it seems to be working in the interests of the people of Yemen, broadly speaking. How much patience, how long do you forecast them being sort of given this political honeymoon or this degree of patience from the Yemeni people that even if they don't see immediate dividends, that they're still going to have faith in the government, they're still going to put their trust in the government? How much time is this next government dealing with?
Well, I wouldn't quite put it that way. I would say okay. that the question is the faith in the government. The question okay. is the trust, that as long as the trust is there, that people will be with it, that it's not a question of the immediate economic rewards, that if you feel like that you have a role in the government and that whatever meager resources the government has, they're being used wisely in a way that you agree with, then you'll hang in there. That is the key question, the trust, the faith in the government. And Yemenis don't have faith in their government and their leaders. If this can come out of it, they would have quite a bit of time, I would think.
Do you see on the – I mean, one of the things that we've seen from the U.S. that's talked about, it's been mentioned in WikiLeaks, Thomas Krajewski, a former U.S. ambassador to Yemen, mentioned that every time the U.S. sort of ran its annual game as to what comes after President Saleh, they came up empty. Do you see any political figures on the horizon in Yemen that you think could command the sort of national trust, the trust in the government that you're talking about? Are there any potential future leaders that you see?
No, what I would hope was that you wouldn't have a single leader like that. That you would actually have a parliamentary government where you would have coalitions, and that you would have, at the top, you're going to have figureheads of old political leaders still sitting there, but that underneath you have people that are working with one another, and in a coalition, not a single leader standing up. Standing out and trying to rule all of Yemen. That would be my hope, that you would have a broad-based government that would be coalitions rather than single people in the leadership.
Right. We've been talking for a while, and one of the things that we haven't talked about, and it's the thing that most stories, of course, lead with on Yemen, is Al-Qaeda. What do you see as sort of Al-Qaeda doing in this next period in Yemen? I mean, I think the fact that we haven't talked about it 40 minutes into a conversation about Yemen is probably indicative, I think.
Well, as you know, Greg, Yemenis in general think that Al-Qaeda is a creation of the president in the United States, or at least a creation of the president in order to get backing from the United States, to scare the United
right.
States. In other words, Yemenis don't see Al-Qaeda as a big problem. The security forces certainly do. I mean, Al-Qaeda has been killing lots of Yemeni security personnel. They made a list of people that they wanted to kill. And there's been in the south in particular, there's been an ongoing battle between the security forces and Al-Qaeda, in which there's been many, many casualties. I guess the question, one thing I would say about Al-Qaeda is clearly the U.S. strategy of using military means to fight an organization like that has backfired.
Yeah.
And that Yemenis do not support Al-Qaeda. I mean, I think that, if you want to talk about trust in government and a hope for the future, Al-Qaeda is not going to bring you hope for the future or trust in government. And I think
right.
Yemenis know that. I think Yemenis, in relationship to Al-Qaeda, that what they're suspicious of is the actions of their own government and the U.S. government in reaction to Al-Qaeda. And in that sense, they'll say, would say, hey, wait a minute about an action when they feel like, that is not an appropriate response. The United States, of course, fears Al-Qaeda, fears instability, because I feel like Al-Qaeda will exploit instability. And what I would say about that is that instability can be a positive thing as well. And in fact, I think in Yemen, instability, a little bit of instability, we should welcome, in the sense that, as you say, it's going to take some time for all these very disparate and rather hostile groups to work it out together. And we should allow some period of instability for this to actually be a positive political development, that we shouldn't necessarily fear instability. Instability can be a good thing. It can bring good changes. Revolutions and popular movements bring a moment of instability, and people, political scientists have long pointed that out, that democracy can be destabilizing. It can create instability, and a little bit of instability is good in that sense.
Well, let me press you a little bit on that, because I think one of the things, I mean, obviously the U.S. government is very concerned about any attacks on the U.S. homeland. The Christmas Day 2009 attack originated in Yemen, as did the fall of 2010, the cartridge bomb plot, neither of which were successful, thankfully, but both of those came from Yemen. And so I think the concern that the U.S. has about this instability is that when Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, the group that's headquartered in Yemen, wasn't under a great deal of pressure from the Yemeni government, that is, the Yemeni government was more was busier prosecuting the war in the north against the Houthis than it was in taking the fight to Al-Qaeda, because despite what people will say, certainly President Saleh has manipulated and used the presence of Al-Qaeda in the country to gain aid. But that doesn't mean that the organization doesn't exist independently. They clearly do. And so the concern for the U.S. is that if they're not under pressure, that they will be able to launch and carry out more attacks that, like what we saw on Christmas Day in 2009. And, you know, is the U.S. willing to take that chance that, you know, the guy won't be able to light the bomb on a plane? I mean, that's a very real concern for politicians in Washington who have to be reelected.
Well, my response to that would be, you know, what does Al-Qaeda need? I mean, what's Al-Qaeda's goal in Yemen? You know, do they mean to take over the government? Well, they may say so, but they have no chance of doing that, right?
Yeah. No, they're nowhere strong enough to do that.
And I think that, people, I think security people, they think that their fear is that Yemen would become like Afghanistan. And you see this in when security people say, well, one thing we fear is instability that Al-Qaeda will exploit, and the other thing we fear is a Muslim Brotherhood-type government, whatever that is. I don't know what they mean by that, but I think what they mean by that is a government that would give cover to Al-Qaeda. The fear, I think, is that Al-Qaeda would have some sort of a stable base like they had in Afghanistan, where like a safe haven. Mm-hmm. where they could operate. And I just don't see, Yemenis tolerating that. I mean, I think that Yemenis know that Al-Qaeda is trouble. If they feel that Al-Qaeda is actually there and that Al-Qaeda is, planning plots and these sorts of things, they know it's not in their interest, and they will, go after them, but go after them not by shooting, missiles in or by special forces and whatnot, but rather, enforcing governance, using local government, using, the institutions of government to go after them. And I think that in the long run is far more effective, getting people on board and aligned with the idea that Al-Qaeda is not in their interests, and they're doing it themselves. It's not the United States doing it. Yeah.
No, I think that's an incredibly important point. I mean, the U.S. has, I think, framed this war against Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula as the U.S. against Al-Qaeda, and I think that framing it like that just won't work. It has to be Yemen against Al-Qaeda, and the U.S. is an ally and is helping Yemen, and we just haven't seen that. But on the point of this Muslim Brotherhood government, and like you, I have no idea what it is that U.S. security officials mean when they say that. But I think one of the fears that remark sort of masks and that remark is referring to is something like what we saw in the late 1990s in Yemen, where we had all of these different Islamist schools within Yemen. And in fact, the current leader of al-Qaeda, Nasser al-Wahishi, graduated from one of these schools that was outside of the government curriculum, was really run by Islam and by Islamist groups that were broadly sympathetic to some of the things that Islam was saying in the late 1990s. So not only Nasser al-Wahishi and Qasem al-Rahimi, the military commander of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, they got their initial training from these Islamist schools. Then they went off to Afghanistan, and then they came back and eventually formed al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. And so I think the concern that U.S. security officials are sort of alluding to or referring to is something along the lines that they're concerned that while this government won't necessarily be allied with al-Qaeda, that the ideology that it preached would somehow be almost a gateway ideology for people to later make their way to al-Qaeda.
Yeah, but that becomes a broad brush that you can paint anybody who has that uses Islam to understand their lives as supporting al-Qaeda. I think it's very dangerous.
No, I agree.
And so there shouldn't be a fear of an Islamic government. And on the question of the schools, I mean, what's interesting to me is the scientific institutes, we'll call them in English, that you're referring to, non-scientific
institutes.
which were funded by Saudi Arabia because the Yemeni government didn't have the resources to put together schools. Those were a big issue. Those were actually an issue in the war in 1994, that the socialists were demanding that those being closed down because they were recruiting grounds for fighters against them. And so what you see there, and the Houthi as well are not going to allow those. So what you see there is that Yemeni society is diverse. There's many different interests. And they recognize that their diversity is an asset. People sometimes see Yemeni diversity as a liability, that it'll become Somalia. But actually in Yemen, I think it's an asset in the sense that they recognize their diversity and they learn to, they recognize they have to live together. So my hope there and my faith in the Yemeni people is that they would reject that kind of some sort of an extreme blanket ideology,
right,
like that. And you saw that. I mean, those things, those schools became a big issue. They became an issue of war. And so if you really did have, regional government, if you really did have representative government in the regional levels, that kind of an ideology would be rejected.
Right. We're I think, almost out of our time, but The last thing I wanted to ask, I don't know if you have any other questions, but sort of looking forward, what do you see as the most likely scenario in Yemen from this point on? I mean, we're at a state where, as we talked about, the protesters have rejected the GCC, the opposition parties have sort of welcomed it, and then today President Saleh rejected it. So moving here, what's sort of how do you see this progressing in Yemen?
Well, it seems to me that with the two rounds of violence against the protesters, that the
one in Sana'a and then in Taz, is that what you're referring to?
Right. With those, the regime has lost its international legitimacy, and that it's on its way out. And I think the two key things are elections as soon as possible, but before those elections will be viewed as legitimate, is the removal of Ali bin Salih's sons and nephews from the security apparatus. Because Yemeni elections are fair in the sense that there's not a whole lot of ballot stuffing. You mentioned one case of it. That's not the main issue, though. The main issue is that the government sort of can manipulate elections by promising water projects or, promising payments to this group or that group, and they'll all vote for the president. That's the issue. And as long as that's not there, as long as, Ali bin Salih's family is not on the reins of power that they could manipulate the government in that way, I think people would trust elections. And I think the only way out is a set of elections. Because right now the street protesters are saying that they are the power, that nothing can happen without them. Well, who are they? We never got to that question. There's some university students and some tribesmen and some other folks that are hanging there. There's some professors. There's medics. There's all kinds of folks that are in there now. But if you go camp in the city square, all of a sudden you become the broker of power. No.
Yeah.
And so I think that once again, institutions, elections. You need to have elections. And I don't think anybody can argue against elections once once Ali Bellasalek and his family are out. You can protest against elections now because they wouldn't be fair.
Right.
But you know, once his family's out, then I think the most important thing is to get elections as quick as possible.
Right, and I think we both agree that President Saleh and his immediate family are on their way out. But then the big question is, then what happens next? What's the next step? And I think that's something that a lot of people are concerned about. I'm personally concerned. I think that, you know, the demands, the expectations that will be placed on the next government that follows President Saleh will just be outrageous. I think they'll be too significant for that government to cope with in any significant way. And so I'm not necessarily concerned about what happens immediately after what President Saleh stepping down, but rather what happens in the medium term, say 12 to 18 months after that. I think that is when Yemen will need a significant amount of international help and will need all of these different groups who, as you said, you have all sorts of people here, but they're all united by one thing, and that is that the president has to go. And at this time, that's really the only thing that's uniting them. So once that's removed from the equation, then I'm hopeful that some of the scenarios that we've talked about will take place, but I don't think that those are the most probable scenarios that could happen.
Well, I would my only response would be, I guess that I have a significant faith in the Yemeni people to guide their own affairs in a way that's positive, and I think that's a critical thing. I think, particularly in Washington, you get a distrust of times of the Yemeni people able to guide their own affairs.
Right, and I think that's a great point to end on. I think.
All right, great. Thank you, Greg.
All right.